Hello, hello, and welcome to Corner Kick Week 2, second episode. I am MG Cease, hosting this podcast through 90.7 The Capstone. I'm excited to be here. I hope that everyone enjoyed the first episode. I hope that everyone enjoyed the excitement that was the Mississippi State University, University of Alabama matchup this past Friday night. This week on the podcast, I am going to give quick general game recap, just a couple of things that I observed. Real quick, talk about some key players that I noticed, and then fun times. The first guest of the podcast, as it is only 2 weeks old, Sam Hallam joins me. He is a pretty dedicated Alabama soccer fan, and he had some thoughts on the excitement that was the end of regulation and the two overtime periods that happened in this game. So I invited him on, and we are going to have a conversation about that equalizer, the two overtime periods, and then he helps me preview Alabama's matchup with Florida that is coming up on Sunday. So I hope you enjoy. Let's get into it. Okay, so general thoughts on the game. I thought it was fun. It definitely, you know, Alabama wasn't as dominant in this game as they were against Tennessee. And I don't know how much of that is because, you know, Tennessee and Mississippi State are different teams. How much of that is home field advantage versus away, which, you know, that's still even up in the air on how much home field advantage actually counts in the middle of a pandemic when not as many fans are allowed in the stands. Or, you know, Mississippi State and Tennessee just play differently. And, you know, it could have just not been Alabama's night. And I guess you can't win all of them. You can't have beatdowns in all of them. And they certainly did start out the season on the right foot with that 3-1 whooping of Tennessee. So this week ended in a 1-1 draw against Mississippi State after two overtime periods. So that means 110 minutes of gameplay. They started the game again with show racism, the red card. That continues to be a theme of the season, is spreading a message of unity, diversity, inclusion, equity, social justice, what have you. And I'm actually gonna talk about that a little bit more as I highlight one of the key players from this game. So Alabama started out aggressively with a high press, just like they did against Tennessee. And freshman Felicia Knox scored within the under the fifth minute. It was like the fourth minute and like 25 seconds or something. So obviously started out on a pretty high energy, intensity, aggressive note. The Bulldogs were more in their attacking third, so the back in the Alabama back line, more so than Tennessee was. This was something that was interesting. So the game was away. I did not go. I watched on TV on SEC Network, as I hope all of you did. And so Julie Foudy was calling the game, or was one of the individuals calling the game. She is a former professional soccer player. She now works for ESPN. And she said that Sanchez Corretto was only just kind of getting her legs under her because of the mandatory quarantine when she came to Tuscaloosa. So that, you know, that kind of makes it even more impressive that as a freshman and as someone who maybe came in a little late and is having to play a little bit of catch up in her fitness level as compared to the level of preseason that the rest of the team got, that she has gotten a start in both of these games. Let's see here. I noticed that I had talked about this in my last podcast, in my last episode, that Alabama was battling down the right flank of Tennessee. This week, they seem to be playing more down the left side. So again, that's that one-on-one winger play that I talked about last week, and I shared that clip of Riley Mattingly saying that, you know, they are very confident in their wingers' ability to go one-on-one with defenders, midfielders, what have you. So Serena Pham was on that left side, and she was definitely giving Mississippi State some trouble in the first 25 minutes or so. They actually switched their right and left backs to try and have some more success in shutting Pham down as she went into that one-on-one battle. But I will say that once they did that, I noticed that the play immediately transferred to the right side, and there was a lot of success. Gabby Duca was finding a lot of success distributing the ball into the box for Mattingly, Pham, and then, you know, ultimately Felicia Knox to and Casey Wirtz to just keep pestering that back line and try and put some shots on goal off of that right side. I will say I think that the Mississippi State back line, and just as in general, their defensive shape handled the pressure that UA likes to play with, that aggressive high press, better than Tennessee seems to. Because at about the 40th minute in the first half, I kind of noticed that Mississippi State had dropped their back line to adjust to the Alabama press. So I was expecting to see an adjustment from Alabama out of the half to that second half. And they did make that adjustment after halftime. Their press was much more aggressive to start out that second half. The Alabama team was really not letting Mississippi State out of their defensive half, their defensive third, even as much as they were in the beginning of the game. We're going to go more into this when my guest comes on, but ultimately Mississippi State scored a literal buzzer beater equalizer goal at the 90th minute to send the game into double overtime. All right, so let's talk about some key players. Let's talk about some players that I noticed, some players I thought were key in this game. Let's start with Rania Reyes. She is a sophomore. She plays midfield and defense. She was one of the more aggressive players on the Alabama attack through this game. She led the team with three shots and three shots on goal. Unfortunately, she was denied by the Mississippi State goalkeeper on all three of her shots on goal. She was moved to the back line of Alabama in the first overtime period after a red card was awarded to a player on the Crimson Tide back line. You know, she's versatile. She led the team in shots and shots on goal, and then she went and, you know, played a very key role in shutting down the Mississippi State attack within those two overtime periods to ultimately lead to a draw, not a loss. But Felicia Knox, I have already mentioned her. She is a freshman midfielder. She had the goal in the fourth. It was kind of a rocket in from a little bit of distance. I mean, not a crazy amount of distance. I think she was still within the box, but I think it was, you know, well, you know, beyond the 18 yards. And she followed Reyes in shots. She had two shots and two shots on goal, and then converted the one to a goal. She actually had the assist as well last week, or I suppose 2 weeks from now, as we are in week three of the season. So she had the assist on Mattingly's second goal against Tennessee. So as a freshman, she is really coming in and stating her case as to why she has been named a starter in both of these two games. Next player that I want to talk about is Taylor Morgan. She came on as a sub in this game. She is a senior midfielder. And this is the story that I was referencing. So Morgan is one of the players who knelt for the national anthem in week one against Tennessee. But she received some backlash, and she put out a statement on her Instagram and her Twitter that actually received a lot of attention. I have to say, I thought it was really well written. I think she is very well spoken. I think she knows exactly what she stands for, and she is going to let you know what that is and why that is. And I think it resonated with a lot of people. Some of those people, including some professional women's soccer players within the United States, such as Sydney LaRue Dwyer, who plays for the Orlando Pride. So her statement had a lot of, she had almost 1,500 retweets and then almost 200 quote tweets on top of that. So clearly her message resonated with many people. I think that speaks to her leadership both on and off the field. Clearly she is someone who people respond to. And not only that, she's talented on the ball. So she followed Reyes and Knox with shots. She had two shots, one shot on goal. And she was subbed in and out quite a bit, saw a good number of minutes, made some plays that eventually led to opportunities that unfortunately, were stopped by, she was an impactful player, especially coming off the bench. Of course, I don't really know if there's going to be a game, in all honesty, that this is not one of my key players, but McKinley Crone, the junior transfer from Oklahoma goalkeeper, she had another game. The instance that I really want to point out is in the 44th minute of the first half, she literally played a game of chicken with Olivia Simpson of Mississippi State University at the UA backline. Like, she wasn't even in goal. I think she was, like, out of the box at this point. I don't know how to describe it other than a straight-up game of chicken. Who's going to come at this ball first to try and wind time off that clock in the first half? In between her game of chicken, she had three saves. Some of them again were her pretty fearlessly coming up off her line to clear away any through balls. Another person I want to mention, Bryn Martin, a senior defender. I think she was very instrumental in shutting down the Mississippi State attack, because while Alabama was pretty successful and was playing with pressure and a high press, Mississippi State was pretty aggressive too. And she had a lot of interceptions, clearances. I thought she was pretty instrumental in keeping Crone to only having to make three saves. Also impactful on that back line, Tana Sanchez Carreto, a freshman, also earning two starts as a freshman, similar to Felicia Knox. I touched on her earlier, so she was impressive. And then Riley Mattingly, junior forward, she did not have the same level of production this game that she did against Tennessee, and I actually spoke to her in between recording this podcast and that game. And she did express to me that she was kind of frustrated with her performance and ready to get out on the field against Florida and do what she does best and what she's expected to do, which is create assists and score goals. But I will say that, even though she didn't necessarily create the numbers this game that she did last, she had a lot of holding runs that did draw defenders in that ultimately freed up you know, Knox and Reyes and Morgan to get their shots off. So I do think that she was an important piece of this game. All right. So that is my analysis. That is my list of key players from this game. We are going to move forward to the next segment, which is Corner Kick's first guest. So I hope you enjoy. I think let's jump in. So, would you like to introduce yourself? I'm talking first name, middle initial, last name, credentials. Like, let the people know why you're here.
Yeah. What's up, guys? I'm Samuel Sterling Hallam. We'll give the middle name there. And I really have no credentials other than being a fan of Alabama soccer. So, I'm going to offer some unsolicited opinions here. Hopefully you guys can stand listening to me for a few minutes, but I'm excited to be on. Thank you for inviting me, Martha Glenn.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I'm excited to have my first guest in my second podcast. All right, so Sam, I have asked you to talk to me about the end of the Mississippi State game and then the two double overtimes, or the two overtime periods, because the game went into double overtime, 110 minutes of gameplay. So let's get into it. So I'll set the scene. I think there's like 20 seconds left on the clock. And Alabama gets a free kick in their defending half. Mattingly gets in a foot race. She takes off. She gets in a foot race with the Mississippi State goalkeeper. It looks like she's going to goal. We're going to end the game 2-0, but the Mississippi goalkeeper gets there first. And then, next thing you know, a literal buzzer beater, Mississippi State equalizes their player, Farrington Bentle, which I have never even heard of a buzzer beater in soccer. Have you?
No. I've been watching soccer for a long time, and that's the first actual buzzer beater I've seen. It felt like a basketball game or something, but
yeah, that's the credentials. I've been watching soccer a long time. Yeah, it did feel like a basketball game. I mean, that was ridiculous. It was I think the ball left her foot with like, what, 2 seconds left, was in the back of the net with double zeros on the clock.
Yeah, and just absolutely heartbreaking if you're an Alabama fan to see that.
Yeah, set the scene. Where were you watching the game?
I was just in my apartment. I tuned in the second half to watch it, and definitely didn't seem like we had quite as much offense going as in the first game, but I felt pretty confident with the 1-0 lead. Mississippi State started getting a few opportunities in the last 20 minutes or so of that game, but obviously the buzzer beater was pretty heartbreaking. You could tell sort of our players just had the wind knocked out of them by that. It's tough to get tied at the end of the game like that.
Yeah, I think that's what struck me the most about that is that I was watching the game with my dad. I went home for my grandmother's birthday. Shout out to her this past weekend in Montgomery. And so we were watching the game together. And I think he and I were talking about it because, you know, Mississippi State had just come in off of a double overtime draw, 1-1 with Auburn. And when that buzzer beater happened, I mean, obviously that's going to inflate their team, like improve their morale. They've just gotten a goal, equalized the game, forced it to overtime. But I don't know, what struck me the most was that, like, on the broadcast on SEC Network, you looked over at the Bama team and they were, you know, obviously displeased with the situation, trying to rehydrate, get ready to go, because it was, I think, 90% humidity in Starkville. I don't know what the temperature was, but I think that says enough that it was 90% humidity. So I guess, you know, trying to rehydrate, get ready to go. Then, you know, the camera pans over to the Mississippi State team. They're like bouncing around, dancing, laughing with each other. And I was just like, oh, this might not end well.
Yeah. And I was actually impressed with how we came out after the buzzer beater in the first overtime period. I think we, even after the red card, which was a tough situation, we kind of recommitted to that press that worked well for us at the start of the game. And I think that was really effective in the two overtime periods, even though obviously it still ended up 1-1.
Yeah, so let's talk about that red card. So it's the 96th minute. So, well, first of all, let's real quick give an overview of the NCAA overtime rules. So it's 2 10-minute periods. It's sudden victory, so first goal wins. If a player substitutes in, they whoever they subbed on for can't re-enter within that period. So somebody gets subbed off in the first period, they can't come back on until the second. And if it's still tied after the second overtime period, the game ends in a draw. So the most extra time that they can play is 20 minutes. So we're in the 96th minute, over halfway through the first period, and Tana Sanchez Corretto gets a second yellow. So she came in on the defender, or on the forward in the box. She is a defender, pardon me. She came in, you know, shoulder to shoulder, but she kind of came in at the player, the Mississippi State player's shoulder with too much speed. And it gave the Bulldogs a free kick right outside the box. McKinley Crone had, you know, a pretty easy collection. But what was, you know, what were your thoughts on that, penalty, on that call?
You know, I feel like the biggest question going forward is just going to be for this next game against Florida, who's going to replace her? Because even as a freshman, she's been a pretty key part of the defense so far. And so I feel like, you know, obviously she's a young player. So you sort of expect a little bit of a learning curve, but hopefully that will be a learning experience for her. Just, it's tough to get a foul that late in the game that leads to a second yellow and a red. But hopefully with the week to prepare for the next game, they'll be able to sort of play around with a couple different options to replace her in that back line. And hopefully it won't end up affecting us too much going forward, but definitely a tough loss to take at the end of that game.
Yeah, so I have since the game, I've talked to Riley Mattingly to kind of get her feelings on that game, and she kind of shared the same sentiment. She said that, you know, she feels very confident in all of, well, she said it before, she said it again, that she's very happy and excited about the group of freshmen and just, you know, new transfers and everything that have come in this year. She was saying that at this point, Coach Hart has been here long enough to kind of bring in all of his recruits. And so she said that, you know, she feels really confident about who's going to be able to rotate in and replace her. But she also said that, you know, she feels really bad, especially just because, you know, she had played a good game, I thought. And I don't, you know, obviously I am not the ref, I don't have those credentials, but I will say, if you're going to call the foul, sure, I guess I thought it was kind of soft for a yellow. But again, I'm not the ref. But so I will say that Rainieray shifted to the left back after that red card. She plays center mid for UA, but she plays an outside back for the Mexican youth international team. And then Pickard came in at center back for the second overtime period. So I think that, you know, already it seems like they had some contingency plans to fill that back line. I think the team has a lot of depth this year.
Yeah, and that's, I feel like that's definitely good to see. And honestly, it could work out with getting a couple of the bench players a little bit of experience on the starting line, so it could end up being a good thing. But I definitely think sort of the fitness levels came into play there. You know, sometimes as a defender, when you get tired, you're sticking those legs out a little bit more and sort of flailing at challenges. So I think that just comes into play with sort of the condensed preseason due to COVID and sort of still working on getting those fitness levels up. But obviously a young player, I'm sure she'll bounce back. And I agree that she did play a really good game before that.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk about fitness levels in this game real quick, because then I do I want to finish talking about these two overtime periods, but I also want to preview the game this Sunday against Florida, get your thoughts on that. So, you know, coming into this game, like I'd said earlier, Mississippi State had already played 110 minutes. Bama had not. They beat Tennessee 3-1 in regulation 2 weeks ago, so just 90 minutes. It was a short week. It was 6 days, not seven. But, I mean, I think they had one player go down at least three times within the game for cramps. Mississippi State did, not Alabama. So, I mean, like, I could kind of tell in that game that, you know, at some points I think fitness was playing into Mississippi State's performance. You know, did you notice anything about that?
Yeah, I definitely saw in the overtime periods, it seemed like Alabama came out with a lot more energy than Mississippi State did. And you could see in those last few minutes of overtime with the cramping and things like that, that fitness did come into play. I think anytime you're playing in 90% humidity, you know, you're going to have situations like that. But, you know, as the season goes on, I feel like all the players will get in better shape and sort of work those kinks out as far as fitness. So,
yeah. I'm trying to read through. Oh, okay. I found them. These are some texts that you were sending me through the game. Okay. You said, man, someone needs to give these girls some pickle juice.
Yeah. That was always our thing playing high school soccer.
You did pickle juice, not mustard?
Yeah. We would always order just big crates of pickle juice, and our coach would give those to us at halftime. So if Alabama's looking for a new fitness coach, happy to come on and give the players some pickle juice. But
Samuel, his credentials, pickle juice in high school, watches a lot of soccer. I'd hire you.
More on my resume than that, but
yeah, it's an extensive resume. It's just those are the top two lines. I think that, you know, I was kind of intrigued and impressed by the aggressiveness and the just like the effectiveness of the press that Alabama came out with within that those two overtime periods, because I mean, I think it was as aggressive and maybe even a higher press than they were playing in for, like, after the first few minutes once Knox scored that goal.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that speaks a lot to sort of the attitude of this team, that even after playing a full 90 minutes, they were able to come out with a lot of energy in the first overtime period. I think also going forward, that's something that they have to commit to for the entire game, because I feel like they've been coming out in the first few minutes with a lot of intensity. Obviously, both games they've scored pretty early goals, but sort of in the last half, that intensity has lagged off a little bit. So I think sort of as the fitness continues to improve, they'll be able to play that press for more of the game. And I think that'll really change the dynamic as far as the second half that we've seen so far.
Yeah, I was listening to, well, first of all, when I was talking to Mattingly after this game, she said that, you know, she was frustrated with the result of the game. Obviously, you want to win all of them, but she said that, you know, she didn't think it was for lack of trying that the game didn't go Bama's way. She kind of felt like it was just one of those days. And she also was, I talked to her about the fitness level, and she was, she said, "We're kind of built different," was her quote. And was very complimentary of the strength staff and, you know, all the trainers and the rehab and stuff that they've been doing over the summer. So honestly, like, I think that going into Florida, Bama, like, I think they're set up pretty well fitness level wise. So Florida just finished their first game of the season. They played Georgia. That game also went to double overtime, ended 1-1. And I think, I could be wrong here, and I can check these stats, but I think that Florida scored early. And then I think it was kind of the same situation where they had some early success, and then they weren't really able to do much afterwards.
That's right. I looked at the stat line. I think that'll definitely be interesting going into the next game, because it seems like both Florida and Alabama are teams that like to come out aggressive and score early. And so I think the first 20 or 25 minutes of that game are going to be really fast paced and fun to watch between those two teams trying to go back and forth.
Yeah. So Florida scored in the 12th minute, and then, Georgia scored in the 41st. So I definitely think that the first quarter of the game, if you will be fun to watch for sure. You know, I think it's hard to gauge exactly how this game is going to go, since Florida has only played one game. You know, there's not as much tape, you know. Alabama's played in two. And there's some history with this matchup. They've played each other like 25 times. Let me double check that number, but they've played each other quite a few times since like 1995, and Florida does have the better of the record.
Yeah, and I really wonder how much the home field advantage comes into play in this sort of COVID era. Mm-hmm. I know, yeah. Mississippi State was able to have some fans at the game who were, you know, ringing the cowbell and yelling a lot.
There was somebody who was sitting right next to the camera, like they had to be. And the whole time, it was a Mississippi State fan, and the whole time they were sitting there and they were yelling, "Let's go White! Let's go White!" I was just like, oh, that's a lot to handle with the cowbells on top of it.
Yeah, so it's definitely an interesting dynamic, because obviously Alabama hasn't been able to have fans at their home games yet. So you really wonder how much that affects sort of the home field advantage and, you know, how the players are feeding off of the crowd and things like that.
Yeah, so Alabama, at the Alabama Soccer Complex, had 131 fans in the Tennessee game, and that was by pass only, no general admission. So the players and the coaches had a certain number of tickets they could give out, and then a couple of people from different media outlets who were covering the game were there. I was excited to get to be one of those and get to be in the stadium. There were a couple of people who were like kind of hanging out outside the field, outside the stadium and watching, but Mississippi State had 375. So that's definitely, and then, you know, at the cowbells on top of it. And that is something that Mattingly has talked to me about. She said that, you know, she misses the Crimson Chaos and the, you know, getting the drums from the $1 Million Band and having people there. I thought that the method that Mississippi State was doing to allow fans in was really interesting. Did you see the little chalk circles they had going on?
Yeah, that was definitely an interesting thing. I don't think I've seen that before at any sporting events, but it looked like they had sort of little circles. They have like a grass area over to the side where fans can sit, and they put each like group of fans in their own little bubble so that they were able to social distance and all that. I'm not sure if that's possible at the stadium we have on campus, but definitely will be interesting to see going forward whether, you know, halfway through the season they're able to allow some fans into the stadium.
Yeah, so Alabama's on the road again this weekend, and Florida is allowing a very weirdly specific number of fans into the Donald R. Disney Stadium. They are allowing 368. So if you're the 369th, sorry, you gotta go. You're out of here. And then I saw, I caught most of the Tennessee Vanderbilt game this weekend, and there was like a pretty solid number of fans at the stadium in Knoxville. I mean, they definitely, you could tell that they had social distancing protocol in place, but it was, they were in the bleachers. So, you know, I don't know, because this is the second away game that Bama is going to play before they come. They'll be home to play Arkansas and Ole Miss. I am interested to talk to some of the players before Arkansas, because I talked to a couple of them before the spring season last year, or at least what was going to be the spring season before everyone got sent home. And I asked Mattingly if she had a game that she had marked on her calendar, and she was like, Arkansas. I want to beat them. I don't like them.
And I was I'm really interested by that dynamic. Yeah. I know that's looking a little bit far ahead, but
yeah, we're breaking the Saban process. We're looking two games ahead, so maybe we should focus back in on Florida. But I'll try to get some more dirt on that
for week three. It seems like kind of an arbitrary matchup, at least to me, for her to be really excited about. But either way, I'm excited to watch it. Hopefully she comes out with some aggression in that game.
Just some bangers. She just ripped the net off.
One of the things I thought was really funny after the Tennessee game was Mattingly's quote, where she said that the coaches were encouraging her to try to head the ball more, because that was something she struggled with last year. And then she obviously scored that header goal in the Tennessee game, and so she seemed really excited about that. So it's fun to watch players sort of develop their games like that and work on new things.
Yeah, maybe in the Florida game she'll get the left foot, right foot header hat trick.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
Yeah, not that I would, though. Don't want to jinx anything. I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious.
Yeah, just a bit stitious.
Just a bit stitious. This is actually, I'm looking at the SEC standings right now, and this is kind of a pretty important game just because the season is so short. You know, I think you and I were talking about this. Every game is kind of heightened importance, but Alabama is actually, funnily enough, second in the SEC West behind Arkansas. So Arkansas is 2-0-0, and they have 6 points. And then Bama is 1-0-1 with 4 points. So, and then Ole Miss and Texas A&M also, they have 3. So, you know, if they win, Bama has to win to be up over them. This game might, you know, this might game might hold a little more weight than people were kind of originally thinking. I mean, also that Florida historically has just had a pretty good program.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, like with this 8-game condensed season, every single match is a huge deal. It's almost like watching football or something else like that, where there's sort of a shorter season. But I think so far we've seen a lot of intensity, and I think the players realize how much every single game matters. So it's definitely obviously not a normal season, but from a fan's perspective, it's fun to watch because it's almost like every game is a playoff game in a way, really fighting for those to get those points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the rest of the season is going to be really interesting, and I think that the intensity level really is only going to like rise from here. And I mean, Bama kind of started the season wide open with the 3-1 beatdown, and then, you know, immediately going from that dominating game into a 1-1 double overtime like slugfest that with a goal in the 4th minute and then a goal in the 90th minute. So yeah, I think that the Florida game is definitely going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to the rest of the season, but you know, I guess we should not look ahead past the week in front of us, especially since they've only got 8 regular season games. So they will be in Gainesville on Sunday. The kickoff is at 4 p.m. and you can stream it on SEC Network. I will be watching. I assume you will be watching.
Yeah, of course.
Maybe we could have a socially distanced mask wearing watch party.
Yeah. We'll drive to Gainesville and sit outside the stadium. Since I'm sure we won't be included in the...
Yeah, we won't make the 368. We'll be the 369th and the 370th. You know, it's a haul. Yeah, so it's exactly. Just a little bit of time that we're going to lose. I don't think we'll make the 368. I don't know. Somebody could Zoom us in if somebody was there. They could, like, have their phone, bring in a Bluetooth speaker and connect it. We could, like, be the remote Crimson Chaos.
as long as we get cowbells, I'll be happy.
Oh, cowbells. Yeah, I'm glad the Gators don't have cowbells.
Well, we'll see. We don't know that yet.
Yeah, maybe they do. Maybe I just jinxed it. I'm going to knock on wood again. Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you for coming. Thank you for offering your overly qualified opinion. I think we're both overqualified here. And who knows, maybe you'll be a recurring feature in these week to week podcasts. I'm having fun with them. I had fun chatting with you. So again, the game is at 4 p.m. on Sunday on SEC Network. That's 4 p.m. Central. So I hope everybody will tune into that. and we'll continue to tune into this. And if you have anything that you want to hear in the next episode, feel free to tweet at me. It's MGCease. That's S-E-A-S-E. It's like cease and desist, but it's just spelled with two S's. But it gives people trouble. So anyways, that is all for this week. Roll Tide, Sam.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.